Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this latest edition of the Serial Court Review on this 7th of June 2014 as we discuss the world of sports. As always, the call number is 347-215-6180. You can hit me up on Twitter at William. You can follow me on Twitter at William Juro. You can hit me up on Facebook at www.facebook.com/SerialQuinn. Or go to my website, SerialJeroQuinn.com. Busy program. A lot to do. As you know, of course, have NBA, covered NBA Finals, had the NBA Finals. Triple Crown could be at stake with California Chrome. Alex Brown will join us at the bottom of the hour to discuss, talk about that, the race to the Belmont. Also, Stanley Cup Finals. The World Cup is coming up. It's coming up this week. But we begin with King James, the most polarizing athlete maybe ever in terms of LeBron James. Of course, the San Antonio Spurs are up 1-0 against the Miami Heat as they were able to take out the Heat late, 110-95. And, of course, LeBron James had to leave the game with a little over 4 minutes left. With cramps, of course, he went out twice. He went out once with 7 minutes, and then finally he went out for good with about 4 minutes remaining. And of course, San Antonio, like a championship team should, took very little time to take advantage of it and just destroyed the Heat in those last few minutes, ending the game with a 31-9 run led by Danny Green's three-point shooting. I'll get to the game aspect of it later on in the program and preview game two. But you hear LeBron James. LeBron cramps up. Of course, we know about the air conditioning system, or lack thereof, which was a disgrace. The NBA should be absolutely embarrassed by that, just like the NFL should have been embarrassed by what had transpired in the Super Bowl a couple of years back with San Francisco and Baltimore. You can't have that happen in the NBA Finals. It's just it's beyond a disgrace. Okay, so, of course, James, who has had a history of cramping up, we saw it in the finals 2 years ago against Oklahoma City. We've seen it a couple times in the regular season. You know, just was not able to go. I mean, you know, anybody who's ever had a cramp, Charlie Horse, when your body locks down, you can't do anything. You can't move that particular part of your body, let alone both legs. If both legs cramp up. So it's like there was nothing that James could do at that particular time to play in that game. Now, if you want to criticize the Heat franchise, then yes, you can criticize them for not having him properly hydrated when they found out that the air conditioning system had gone out, which happened around, in the middle of the first quarter. So that's a fair criticism, that they did not do a good job of having him properly hydrated, considering his history with the cramping. That's fair. But you can't knock James. I mean, you can, but, you know, you can if you're just outright LeBron James, just hater. And this, again, and this situation showed, despite the fact that you have a guy who at the age of 29 has accomplished everything that an athlete can accomplish, not a basketball player, an athlete, I mean, you know, sportsman of the year, AP athlete of the year, Olympic gold medals, championships, MVPs, he's done it all. He's done everything that you can accomplish. He can retire now if he retired today, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer, you know, right? Just, I mean, of all, he's an all-time great. Top 10 player right now. He's a top 10 player in NBA history. And I think that, you know, I've been critical of James for a few basketball reasons in the past, and for a few non-basketball reasons, because I thought that he at times is going out of his way to draw attention to himself with comments or with actions that were just frankly unnecessary. But to rip or criticize him on this is just shows you that he's right when he says that he is the easiest target in sports. And you think about that. Think about that statement. Easiest target. I am the easiest target in sports, despite the fact that, again, I've done everything that a human being in terms of an athlete can do. Why is that? Why is he the easiest target in sports? You know, why? I mean, you know, why? It seems like after this type of situation happened, that there's always going to be a faction of people who just find anything to criticize LeBron James for. No matter how many championships, no matter how many MVPs, no matter what he does, it seems like that is always going to be the case. And it's unfortunate because you are watching somebody right now. You know, one of the reasons why he cramped up is because in terms of what he's asked to do as a player on that team, no player in NBA history has ever been asked to do more than LeBron James. Not Michael, not Kobe, not Wilt, not Kareem, not Magic, whoever. No player. I mean, not only is he that team's dominant offensive player, at least in rebounding, scoring, and assists, he's their dominant defensive player. It's not a coincidence that when he left the game, Dan Green all of a sudden got free for a couple three-point shots. That was not a coincidence by any stretch. Okay. So he is asked to do more than anyone easily to ever play this game. And to me, at some point, you know, the Skip Baileses of the world, these other contrarians, just shut up. Just need to shut up. I mean, about LeBron. Like, there's nothing you can say, at this point, especially if he wins this year, because I think San Antonio is a better team. If he wins this year, it's like, come on. Like, there's nothing. He wouldn't have to even win another championship, as far as I'm concerned. There's nothing you'll get, like, you can't pick at him. There's no more picking at him anymore. There's nothing you can say. With that being said, Game 2 will be a big game for LeBron James as far as, I mean, he needs to, for Miami to win, he needs to dominate, but he really, just to quiet the critics again, needs to come out there with a big-time game. So we'll see what happens with that. 347-215-6180 is your call number. Just getting started here on this latest edition of the Circle Review. We'll be back with today's headlines. Of the Cyril Crew Review, 347-215-6180. It's your call number. French Open Women's Finals all squared up at 4 4 all in the third set. Maria Sharapova seeking another French Open title versus Halib, who's a very good player, ranked higher than Sharapova. First time in the history of that tournament that you had the top three seeds eliminated. Of course, you had the Williams sisters go out basically in the second round, or even in the first round. Let me correct myself. Sharapova certainly has taken advantage of that and made her way to the final for a third straight year. But right now she is in a struggle with Halib again. Halib, who is ranked number 4 in the world. Of course, men's final next tomorrow morning. Djokovic and Nadal. Nadal looking for a Grand Slam number 14. And if Nadal wants to catch Federer, tomorrow is almost a borderline must win, because I still think Federer has a chance to win Wimbledon. Still think Federer has a chance to win Wimbledon this year. I think it'll be his last shot at a Grand Slam. And listen, four majors is a lot to be behind. Again, that would be a huge, huge step for Nadal to catch Federer if he were to win the French Open tomorrow. Looking for his ninth French Open title. More majors won than anyone. He has more French Open majors than any player in history and has at any other major tournament. As dominant on that surface as any player has ever been on any surface, has Rafael Nadal. But again, Djokovic almost beat him a couple of years ago at the French Open, so that should be a classic match. Djokovic, I believe, has beaten him 3 straight years. Excuse me, has beaten him 3 or 4 straight times when they have met in finals. So looking for probably another 5-set classic as Djokovic takes on Nadal. Stanley Cup Finals Game 2 tonight. Rangers looking to even up the series versus the LA Kings. Kings are hot right now. Coming back from a 2-0 deficit in Game 1 of that series. Rangers are going to have a hard time against the Kings. The Kings are one of those teams that just, first of all, they're never out of a series. And the worst thing for the Rangers was for them to lose Game 1, because the Kings are normally a slow-starting team in these series. They've been down a couple times, 3-1 in these series to come back and win. But, the Kings get off to a good start in the series, then, this could be a quick series if the Kings win tonight. So a big game on borderline, a must-win for the New York Rangers. 347-215-6180. Here's your call number on this last edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. Trouble in Chapel Hill. We'll talk about that and much, much more in this last edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. We'll be right back. Is your call number on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review as we discuss the world of sports. Again, a busy weekend in the world of sports, a lot going on with the NBA Finals. We'll talk more about that with the tennis, the French Open, World Cup coming on. A lot of news in the World Cup in this past week in regards to the USA coach and, of course, Ronaldo, who you know, apparently has a voodoo curse against him, as far as we can according to his witch doctor. I don't know about that, but certainly his injury is certainly a concern moving forward into this World Cup, which will start. We start June 12th, Thursday. Next Thursday in Brazil. So a lot to do on this latest edition of the Cyril Gwynn Review. Rashad McCants comes out and basically is trying to sink Carolina basketball. I mean, he comes out, says that he took African-American studies courses, that is basically the papers that he wrote was a sham. He had tutors writing papers for him. He would have failed if not for tutors writing papers for him, if not for the fact that he majored in African American studies, which at, you know, for a semester he was receiving straight A's, and in his other grades he was failing outside that major. So again, none of this stuff is a shock, considering what's been transpiring at North Carolina for the past 5 or 6 years. They've had an academic fraud investigation from 2007 to 2011. That was mainly focused on the football team, but you also have some basketball players in that mix that's still kind of ongoing. But this is the first, you know, he's the first guy, first athlete to come out, first basketball player to come out and say that this type of thing was happening. First, again, none of the things that he said is a surprise, and none of them are outlandish. Number one, but the second thing is you have to consider, as Maria Sharapova has won the French Open, that you have to consider the source. Rashad McCants is a guy who, when at North Carolina, was as enigmatic and inconsistent as any player of any counter player that they've ever had. He was not recruited by Roy Williams. He was a Matt Doherty recruit. Roy Williams came in when McCants was a sophomore, coached him for 2 years before McCants left for the NBA after they won the 2005 championship. And the reason I said he wasn't recruited by Williams is Williams would not have recruited Rashad McCants. He just wouldn't, once he found out that all, you know, all, some of the baggage that he had and just the things that it wouldn't have happened. Okay. And again, you're talking about a guy who, you know, hates Williams. I mean, let's be honest. He's a guy right now who is out of the NBA, playing overseas, and, you know, I don't want to say down on his luck because he's still playing professional basketball overseas, but let's be honest, Rashad McCants, for his talent, when you look at what Danny Green is doing right now in the NBA, Danny Green doesn't have half the talent of Rashad McCants. Rashad McCants should have been a 10 to 15-year NBA veteran who could have been a spot-up shooter just like Danny Green and with more athleticism. He could have been Danny Green. He could have been a better version of Danny Green. Okay, but he's a guy, again, whose attitude, lack of work ethic, just lack of understanding of the game of basketball, it's a whole combination of things. It just didn't materialize. And, again, he was out the league in 4 years. And it wasn't any surprise after watching him at North Carolina that he was out the NBA in 4 years. So you look at Rashad McCants' motivation for this. And, you know, I'm just somebody who, you know, if you're going to try to bring another figure down, another person down, do you really want to expose yourself in doing that? I mean, I'm thinking, if I'm Rashad McCants' parents, what am I thinking? Am I blaming North Carolina for, you know, writing my son's papers supposedly, or having tutors, you know, do his work for him? Or am I blaming him for not speaking out sooner? Or for coming out and just making himself look horrible. I mean, you're admitting that you did that. You basically did no work, and then trying to play the role of, oh, young, dumb, didn't know better. No. You go to college as a teenager, but you enter college as a teenager. You leave as an adult. I don't want to hear this, that you didn't know what was going on, that you weren't cognizant that this wasn't, that you weren't doing your work. You know whether you're doing work or not. You always have to consider the source when something like this happens. You always have to look at the background of the relationship that the person who comes out as a whistleblower has with the person that they're trying to take down. Okay. So, if you have Michael Jordan come at Dean Smith, you'd be like, whoa, what's going on? And of course, this has never happened. Michael Jordan loves Dean Smith. But if you had Michael Jordan come at Dean Smith and say, you know what, during my time in North Carolina, I was, you know, teens were doing this, that, you know, I really didn't write my own papers. I didn't do this. They did this for me. They did that for me. Then that would cut deeper, because here's Michael Jordan. He's worth hundreds of millions of dollars. He's been as successful as any athlete has ever been. Why is he coming at Dean Smith? Dean Smith, you thought they had a great relationship. It would carry a lot of weight. Rather than a guy who is out of the league, hated his coach, and frankly is looking to, you know, promote himself in many ways. He's already talked about writing a book about his life and experiences at North Carolina. There might be 10 people that might buy that book. I mean, nobody cares. You're not a big enough figure for anybody to care about your experiences at North Carolina. I'm sorry. You're just not. So, again, you always have to consider the source in this type of situation. The flip side to this is North Carolina has some issues. So let's be honest. Rashad, you know, he's the only player, basketball player right now to come out about this, but you do have whistleblower Barry Willingham, who was a former UNC learning specialist, who says that she believes McCants in terms of the fact that tutors are writing papers for him, and you know, the coaches had classes or majors lined up that would ensure that players would pass and be eligible. Yeah, and that's another thing. McCants would have been academically ineligible if not for those particular classes in African American Studies. He was failing a number of classes outside of that major. And remember, McCants was despite his mercurial nature, was a second leading scorer on that team. They don't win a national championship without Rashad McCants. He's a very good player. Third team All American as a junior. He's a very good player. Very talented player. So North Carolina has some issues. You know, during Dean Smith's 30 plus years in North Carolina, it was a squeaky clean program. Squeaky clean. Roy Williams, great coach, great person as far as, you know, everybody loves Roy, but you've had the situation with PJ Harrison and Leslie McDonald. Now you have this. So it has not been a good 2 or 3 years for Roy Williams. You wonder how long he'll coach, considering some of these things that have transpired. Now, P.J. Harrison thing was less of his fault. I mean, it was more about P.J. Harrison making an individual choice, but still, Roy Williams recruited him. 347-215-6180 is the call number on this latest edition of the Cyril Goodman Review. Alex Brown will join us in a couple of minutes. We'll be right back. 26 minutes after the 12 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review, 347-215-6180 is the call number. Last week, we talked about the Twitter disaster from the Washington Redskins as they tried to send backlash towards Senator Majority Leader Harry Reid for you know him vehemently being against the Redskin name, the Redskin game, and like a lot of people wanting the Redskin name to be changed. And it wasn't bad. It's bad enough the Redskins should have been absolutely embarrassed by that, by their actions. Now this past week they're going to come out and basically say, you know, social media is a way to get information to people. Our fans have spoken in support of what we've been doing. Blah, 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 blah. We got a good, very good response from our fans. And, you know, I just don't get the Redskins with this situation. I've read some of those Twitter messages that came, you know, with them trying to swing people's opinions, trying to change people's opinions against Harry Reid, and it was not a pro Redskin. None of them that I read were pro Redskins, the pro Redskin name. None of them. So maybe these are hidden letters that that Bruce Allen is reading. I don't know, maybe he's a season ticket holder. Listen, just don't say anything at this point. I mean, this is the Redskins trying to change and manipulate the opinion of fans who are either on the fence or otherwise. But just stop talking about it if you're the Redskins. We know what your opinion is. Leave it at that. Moving right along from that, we'll now be joined by Alex Brown of Alex Brown Racing, who will certainly be tuned in for what could be history in the horse racing world as California and Chrome goes for a triple crown, first time since 1978 affirmed. Alex, how you doing?
Very good. Very excited.
Absolutely, Alex. This has to be just could be a tremendous day for the sport of racing, no question about it. First of all, Alex, looking back at the Preakness, I thought, and I watched it again this morning, I thought that California Chrome's performance in the Preakness was even more impressive than the one in the Kentucky Derby, considering how great Ride On Curling challenged him. What were your thoughts about that Preakness win?
Yeah, I mean, I was very impressed with the way he won the Preakness. I think, like you say, Ride On Curling sort of started to close late, but I think he held him up pretty comfortably. He had to move a little bit sooner than perhaps he would have liked with the other horse, I forget his name right now, Social Inclusion, coming to his outside at the half-mile pole. So I don't think the race was set up ideally for California Chrome, and yet he still sort of won with a little bit handily. So so far he's just shown that he's better than the horses he's running against. It's been very, very impressive.
Now you have this field, Alex. You have 11 horses. In this 11 horses in this particular field. Is there a horse or horses who haven't ran in either the Preakness or the Kentucky Derby that pose a legitimate threat to California Chrome?
Yeah, I mean, the one horse that people will focus in on that fits that criteria is a horse called Tonalist, whose most recent effort was in the Peter Pan Stakes, which is traditionally considered a bit of a prep race for the Belmont, and he won that race quite comfortably. And he hasn't competed in either the Derby or the Preakness races. So he'll be considered a bit of a fresher horse. The question is he really good enough at this level to compete with California Chrome? Some might think he will, and some might think he has that Edge being a little bit fresher. But I'm, you know, I still think California Chrome's a better horse than a fresh Tonalist.
Tonalist is 8-1, and I'm glad that you brought Tonalist up because he's being written by, Joel Rosario and Alex. What's going on with Rosario? This will be the third different horse that he's rode during this Triple Crown. Remember, he started out with General A-Rod, Ride on Curlin. He rode a great. Ride on Curlin rode a great race. It's not uncommon, as you know, for horses for jockeys to be on different horses during these Triple Crown races because you know maybe a horse sits out, maybe there's a change. It's not uncommon, but I don't think I've seen a jockey be on three different horses during the Triple Crown. I can't remember the last time I've seen it. What do you think is going on with Rosario?
Honestly, I'd forgotten the circumstances, i.e. that he rode Ride on Curlin in the Preakness. My assumption is the reason why he's on Tonalist is from a previous arrangement with his trainer, Christophe Clement. And Christophe Clement is a big trainer in New York, and Rosario will ride a lot of horses for that trainer. Now, Ride on Curlin, he's trained by Bill Gowan, who's from Kentucky and has about five horses. So there's, you know, sometimes jockeys and jockeys' agents make these decisions ahead of time, and it's out of the hands of the trainer. So I'm sure Gowan didn't choose for Rosario to get off his horse. But that all being said, if you're going to need to find a new rider in New York, why not find Johnny Velasquez, which is what Gowan did, to have on your horse this afternoon? Because Velasquez, out of every, you know, there's not one rider you would want more on your horse in New York than Velasquez. So I'm sure Gowan would have been very happy with Rosario staying on his horse, but if he's going to have to find a substitute, Velasquez is the guy to get.
Belmont Stakes tonight, this evening, California Chrome looking to be the first Triple Crown winner since 1978. You'll certainly be everybody will be tuned into that. Is California Chrome built for this track as far as the distance? This track course is 1.5 miles. The longest distance of any of the Triple Crown races. Is it a stamina horse? What are your thoughts on that?
You know, nobody will know until they run this race. This will be the first time these horses have had to run in a race of 1.5 miles, and it'll be the last time for most of them. They won't be doing this again. If you look at California Chrome's pedigree, you know, some would argue that it's too much speed in there, and some would say if you go back far enough, it's perfectly fine. I would focus more on his running style and the way he's run his races. And my observation of the way he's run his races, I don't see how the added distance is going to make much difference to him. He's a very rateable horse, very adaptable. I think Victor Espinoza is sitting on a horse that he can choose to do absolutely anything with during this race, which is fantastic. So if he was a front-running horse, if he had to be on the lead, like Lights of Funny Side or War Emblem or something like that, I would be a little bit more concerned. But California Chrome, I think, is very adaptable, and I don't honestly see the added distance being a problem for him. I think the problem, is he fresh enough? Will some of these fresher horses have a little bit of an edge, and will that make a difference? But I'm hoping that's not the case. I think California Chrome is truly would be a great Triple Crown winner if he was a Triple Crown winner.
So do you think, like with 1.5 miles, do you see any major, you know, strategic adjustments by Velasquez, Espinoza, in terms of how he'll, you know, will he try to go out, you know, as a front runner, when you try to just lay low for it until, you know, you get to a certain point in the race, will you see the difference in strategy?
I think Victor Espinosa will break him out of the gate, and kind of like he did in the Preakness. If you look closely, he broke him out of the gate in the Preakness and then sort of drifted 3 horse paths wide into a spot where he absolutely wanted to be in the clear. I think one of the concerns that Espinosa might have is some of these other riders trying to get in his way, trying to sort of upset his Triple Crown bid, especially some of them that perhaps on horses that really haven't got a shot in this race. So given that, he's going to want to get clear. But I don't think he necessarily needs to want to be on the lead. So maybe get out in the clear, get out in the 2 or 3 horse path and sit about 3 or 4 lengths off the early pace, and then sort of start making his move gradually down the backside. You know, when you're on the best horse and when everybody's out there to beat you, sometimes you've got to be just careful you don't get caught in tight quarters and so forth. But Victor Espinosa is a very smart jockey. I think he's already planned out in his mind exactly what he's going to do.
What do you like? How does this horse, how does California Chrome compare to some of these recent horses who have failed at winning the Triple Crown? I'm talking Big Brown, the Big Browns of the world, the Smarty Jones, Real Quiet, Funny Side.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think certainly Big Brown losing was a complete shock. I think he was certainly the best horse in that race. So clearly there must have been something wrong with the horse for Kendall Zorman to pull him up. So I think you can toss that out. I think California Chrome is, you know, relative to the other horses in this field, a real true standout. He's, like I said before, he's not one-dimensional in his running style, which can make a horse prone in a race like this, so he's very adaptable. I think if you look at Smarty Jones's Triple Crown bid, you can make a very strong case that other jockeys did deliberately make an effort to ruin his Triple Crown. Jerry Bailey on whoever he rode, and Alex Solis on Rock Hard 10. They made it very, very difficult for Smarty Jones to win that race. And you know, if you look, there's been 10 or 11 horses going into the Belmont with a chance of Triple Crown, so it's ridiculous for me to feel confident that he can do it, given that 11 horses have failed to do it in the same circumstance. But this horse does give you a sense that he is just that much better now. There are 3 horses that people will talk about quite heavily as horses that have a shot against him, I suppose. 4 if you include Tonalist, but I think we have to mention Wicked Strong and Commanding Curve, who both ran well in the Derby, obviously behind California Chrome and skipped the Preakness. And you have to give props to Ride on Curling too, because that second place finish in the Preakness was a very good performance for that horse. And he proved in his race in the Preakness that the Derby was a toss-out. He got a dreadful ride by Calvin Burrell in the Kentucky Derby. So it was proven, I think, that Ride on Curling is a legitimate horse too.
So which one of those horses that you just mentioned, Ride on Curling, Wicked Strong, Violent Carlin and Ricket Strong, is the biggest and Commanding Curve.
Yeah.
Which one of those should California Chrome worry about the most? Which one? Not that the horses are going to be worried, but you know what I mean. Which one would pose the biggest threat to California Chrome?
I mean, quite honestly, I think it's a wash between all 3. I would love to see California Chrome and Ride on Curling be the exacta. I really think that the Ride on Curling camp has been very good in this sort of Triple Crown series, and quite honestly, they form quite a good relationship with the California Chrome crew because their horses have been stable next to each other now for 3 or 4 or 5 weeks. So it's kind of nice to see that, and they finished 1-2 in the Preakness. They haven't docked a race. They're both back to the Belmont. But the advantage that Commanding Curve, who is second in the Derby, and Wicked Strong, who I think was fourth in the Derby, you might correct me, but they basically, you know, been targeting this race, the Belmont, ever since the Derby. So they've had 5 weeks to prepare rather than have to run in the Preakness in between. So that does give them a big freshness edge. And of the two, the Commanding Curve is a very impressive-looking horse. And you know, he might be on the big improve. So you know, 15-1, he might be a horse to sort of throw into some exotic-type bets.
One of the beauties of this sport is the lack of the human element that's going to impact the outcome. And in comparisons to, you know, with professional athletes, have the pressure, the media, things of that nature that can somewhat change the outcomes of different events depending on the makeup of that particular person. With a horse, that's not the case, but with that being said, can a horse, and you've been around horses, you know, the better part of your life, enough horses to understand, so I think to answer this, can a horse get a sense of the moment as far as with how many cameras are around, how many people are around, maybe the jockey's pushing them a little bit harder than normal? Can a horse get a sense that this is for the Triple Crown? And I know that might sound like a strange question, but
right.
Do you, can, like, are horses kind of aware of that in some way, shape, or form, in any way, shape, or form?
Well, if you ask Victor Espinosa, as David Letterman did the other night, he basically says that he doesn't think California Chrome really cares or knows what the occasion is. But obviously Victor does, right? So you say there's no human aspect to this. Clearly Victor's going to be going out there thinking, shit,
right.
Well, you shouldn't say that, but the Triple Crown is on the line. This is a big moment. I'm an athlete. You know, we've got to try to get this done. And he's been in this same spot with War Emblem back in the early 2000s and wasn't able to get the job done. So there is some pressure there for Victor Espinosa, no doubt about that.
Right.
But California Chrome, what will he experience today? He'll experience a crowd of, what, 120,000, 130,000 people. Kind of similar to a crowd that he experienced at the Kentucky Derby, the Preakness. You know, these last few races, big crowds, lots of noise, lots of hoopla, and clearly he's handled that well to this point. But this isn't like running a Penn National on a Friday night where there's three people there. This is a, you know, these are big occasion events, and when that gate opens, it'll be right in front of the grandstand. It's a mile and a half race, and it's a mile and a half around that big racetrack. So when those gates open, the roar will be, you know, massive from the crowd. So he's got to handle all that, and he has had a little bit of trouble in the gates in the past. So hopefully that's not a problem. But you know, the occasion is big, but he has been in big occasions before, right? And he's handled it well. So fingers crossed, and you know, hopefully we'll see him make some history.
Two last ones before I let you go. What would a Triple Crown win mean to the sport, and what does that do to the horse as far as its value? Since we haven't seen it since 1978, you know, let's say he wins. What is his value, and what does this do for the sport of horse racing?
Right. I mean, in terms of the sport of horse racing and for just those of the love horses more generally, this is a big occasion. You know, everybody's talking about California Chrome today, the Triple Crown bid today, and what we need is for everybody talking about California Chrome tomorrow and the Triple Crown one tomorrow, and next week and the week after. What has happened in the past is obviously the next day everybody's just disappointed, and then we forget about horse racing until the next year. So clearly a win by California Chrome will keep the conversation going. And as long as California Chrome then stays in training and shows up at different racetracks and different races, that's going to be a huge boost, I think, for horse racing, to bring people out, to engage, and so forth. So this is a big deal for horse racing and for horse people more generally, I think. And then in terms of California Chrome's value, that's an interesting question. I think if he wins today, there's obviously added value to him, as he's potentially going to be a good stallion down the road. But the fact is, he's already won the Derby, he's already won the Preakness, he's already won the Santa Anita Derby. So there's already a lot of value built into the sport. He's probably worth $20, $30 million or something at this point. So I absolutely, the value goes up if he wins today. If he gets beat today, the value might drop just a little bit, but this is already an extremely valuable animal. So the biggest uptick of him winning today is absolutely what it does for the sport.
What's the bonus, the Triple Crown bonus if he wins? Isn't there a Triple Crown bonus, like $10 million, something like that if he wins?
Yeah, there used to be. And maybe 5 or 10 years ago, that sponsorship stopped, which is unfortunately symptomatic of the sport, right? You know, the sport itself has sort of been on a steady decline for quite a number of years, and that Triple Crown bonus was one of the things we lost more recently. But obviously the individual value of these races is very high. The purse for the Preakness for the Belmont is $1.5 million, of which the winners get 60%. So that's a pretty good chunk of change right there.
So finally, Alex, who do you like to win, place, and show in this last Triple Crown race of the season?
Right. I mean, I'm hoping obviously California Chrome to win. And think he's obviously very capable of winning. I think he's the best horse in the race, no doubt. So whether circumstances get him beat or just the fact that he's been on the go for a long time gets him beat, I don't know. But I think he's the best horse in the race. Put him in to win. You've got to have a bet on the Triple Crown, so that would be good. And like I say, Ride On Curling and Commanding Curve would be the other two horses I would put in there. And if you're really into your betting, you bet them across the board, because if California Chrome does not get the job done, as tragic as that would be, those two horses will pay quite well to win.
Yeah, I just get that sense. I've been thinking about it in particular this last week with the 3-week gap between this race and of course the Preakness, that I think that, the sport has a chance that we'll be in line for something special today. I just have a feeling, in comparison to these past horses who have had opportunities to win. I got and I don't know more about horse racing than the next person, but I just got an instinctual feeling that this could be a big day for horse racing with this particular horse. It seems to me like, he clearly is the best horse in the race, but it also seems like that the challenges are just not as good. Like, you have some good challenges, but not great challenges. So I kind of get that sense that things are starting to align for him to be a Triple Crown winner. So we'll see what happens with that. So you like California Chrome to win, Ride On Curling and Wicked Strong to place and show?
Commanding Curve and Ride On Curling,
okay, Commanding Curve and Ride On Curve. Okay, so we'll see what happens with that. Alex, as always,
fingers crossed.
Six straight years. Absolutely. I definitely want to see. It'd be great for the sport, great for sports in general. Yeah. If you had a Triple Crown winner, we'll see what happens here. We'll see what happens with it, and enjoy the race.
Brilliant. Thanks, Dr. Joe. Take care.
All right. Take it easy.
Okay.
Alex Brown, of course, who's done a wonderful job over the past 6 years of breaking down these races and these horses. I kind of like California Chrome. I've watched just watching him. I like how the jockey has handled him as far as how he's ran these races. I don't think the challenges are that good, to be honest with you. I know Ride On Curling Ryan Curlin ran a great race in the Preakness, but like Alex said, you never got the sense that, that California Chrome was not going to win that race. So we'll see. We might see some history here, and we might see some history here with the horse racing. It'll be certainly great. Haven't had a Triple Crown winner since 1978. We'll be right back on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. Welcome back to this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. Riddle's rant of the week comes from Jaden Jones, who is a 10-year-old basketball phenom. Yeah, 10-year-old basketball phenom who apparently, according to Marissa Payne, who wrote this article in the Washington Post, is the next LeBron James, or is on pace to become the next LeBron James. So, at 10 years old, she's been able to identify through some YouTube tapes, some ball handling, which is, ball handling, dazzling ball handling, that this kid is on pace to be the next LeBron James. Like, come on. And this is the problem. This is the problem with the social media, YouTube, all the technology that we have, that we have in 2014. You see, 10 years ago, we wouldn't have been talking about 10-year-olds, 10-year-old basketball prodigies. Maybe in tennis, maybe in soccer, not in basketball or baseball. Because we would have actually allowed the kid to reach puberty before we started discussing about him being the next or her the next anything. Nowadays, we don't even allow kids to be – the kid hasn't even graduated elementary school, and we already have him on pace to be LeBron James at 10. I watched the YouTube video. Clearly, he is a special talent at 10 years old, and clearly, at worst, he'll probably, injury withstanding, get a college scholarship. Past that, I'm not going to say that he's going to even make it to the NBA, let alone be on pace to become LeBron James. I mean, come on. And again, I don't blame the kid. Somebody, on a cell phone or, on whatever, iPad, all this technology, probably was watching this kid at a tournament, AAU tournament, probably emailed or called a reporter. The reporter, probably watched it like, hey, let me do this piece and call him the next LeBron James. It'll draw attention. I seen the next LeBron James. Look at this kid dribble. I mean, come on. It's beyond ridiculous. It's beyond ridiculous. Let the kid, I mean, can we please let the kid, develop and grow up? I mean, please. And again, I'm not blaming the parents this time. I mean, normally some of this stuff comes from the parents. The parents that make the YouTube video and mail it out, put the kid on YouTube, try to expose their kids, looking for having dollar signs in their and they're flashing in their minds, in their eyes. But this is the media reporting this. This is the media. And again, as many positives as technology and social networks have nowadays is just an amount, it's almost an equal amount of negatives. It really is. That's the Rillo rant of the week. 347-205-6180 is your call number. We began the program talking about LeBron James and just when is it going to stop with the polarization and the criticism that he seems to receive at every turn. Like, when is it going to stop? Of course, the latest is the cramping up in game one of the NBA Finals. He cramped up in the fourth quarter, had to leave the game twice, the second time leaving with about 4 minutes left. Miami was down by two. He scored a layup to cut the lead to two, and then had to leave with the cramping and never returned. And of course, he's being made fun of, which is fine. You want to make jokes of it? It's fine. You want to make jokes of it? That has no problem with that. But some of the more serious criticism in terms of his toughness. And of course, you hear the old, the 70-year-old in the barbershop, Bill Russell never left a game, Michael Jordan never left, and so on, and what have you. And, again, for a guy who's 29 years old, who has accomplished everything that an athlete can accomplish, not a basketball player, an athlete can accomplish, I just don't think there's no more criticism to be said against him anymore. I think it's basically almost, it's like what can you say about him without it sounding like you just hate LeBron James or like you just hold a grudge against LeBron James. It's like saying Beyonce has a pimple. I just don't think you can say anything more about him, and especially in this particular situation. Again, you play basketball, you play any sport, you cramp up, it's a wrap. If you get to a point to where you can't move your legs and you cramp up, you're not going to do it. You're not going to be able to do anything. So, we don't question his toughness. To me, overall, in terms of, the situation with the heating system, with the air conditioning system, I fully blame on the NBA. It's a disgrace. You can't have that happen in the NBA Finals, but players got to play through it as far as, these are conditioned athletes, so certainly didn't feel sorry for the athletes because it's just a part. I feel sorry for the fans more than I did the athletes. The fans got to sit up there in long sleeve shirts and pants and things of that nature. Athletes, you got shorts and T-shirts on, basically, and tank tops on. They're fine. So we'll see what happens in game two. Obviously, San Antonio must win for Miami. You can't go down 2-0 against San Antonio and expect to win the 4 out of 5. It's not going to happen. But Miami is 12-0 when they've lost game one of series. And not only are they 12-0, they've killed the team the following particular game by an average of 15 points a game. So we'll see what happens in game two, see adjustments will be made. I thought that we were in game one, that we were headed towards a classic before that air conditioning system transpired. Hopefully there's nothing that will keep this game from being a classic. Still think this is a seven game series, San Antonio in seven. We'll see what happens in game two tomorrow evening. That's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the Circle Review. Thanks to Alex Brown for joining the review. I will see you next week. So long.